A new hour of the Guy Benson Show. Thank you for listening. I'm Guy Benson, live in Washington, D.C. Since we last took a break, CNN has covered even more of the protests. They're going basically wall-to-wall with the anti-Trump protests over the mass shootings. And talking to elected officials and activists who don't want the president visiting these communities. And there's certainly an element of both communities that feel that way. There are plenty of other people, I'm sure, who feel differently. But I just feel like giving disproportionate attention to the protests is contributing actively to disunity. Right? They can talk all they want about healing and how Trump isn't good at healing, but now let's go wall to wall with people telling the president to stay out of their cities. That's going to help. That's why I feel like we are almost systematically unable to come together as Americans so often these days, because there are people with agendas that are more interested in furthering those agendas than actually doing the things that might help. And I'm not trying to paint all of CNN or all of MSNBC in one direction, just like I don't like when people try to do that to Fox. But the coverage is striking. We get it. They don't like Trump. They have criticisms of what Trump says and does. Sometimes I do too. But it seems like they are actively trying to prevent Trump from being able to help with the healing by crowding out those types of voices and highlighting the strife to the greatest extent possible. Like the Chyron right now on CNN, Trump arrives in El Paso to protests. During the last hour, they had a split screen of the protest for almost the entire hour live. This is the coverage of the president coming to try to help grieving families. Anyway, I'll climb down off the soapbox for a moment and welcome our guest, Charles Cook. He's the editor of National Review Online. His book is The Conservatarian Manifesto. Charles, it's good to have you back. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So the New York Post, which is owned by the same parent company as Fox News, tends to lean to the right editorially. They put out a House editorial this week calling for an assault weapons ban. You've seen this from some right-leaning people, including the president, actually signaling more openness to certain gun restrictions. You have written a piece at National Review really in a detailed way, fisking the Post editorial. You call it nonsensical. You write that the editorial from the Post is, quote, a profoundly lazy, impressively ignorant, and doggedly cliche-ridden piece of work that at no point even attempts to deal seriously with the arguments that it believes it is refuting. All right, that is tough stuff. Charles, walk us through why you think on the substance this misses the mark, this argument.
Well, I would be surprised if anyone who contributed to that editorial knows anything at all about guns. The reality is that irrespective of one's view of the Second Amendment or of our present gun laws, any reforms, such as the ones the New York Post apparently wants, will have to be written into law. And the New York Post's editorial board makes an attempt to suggest what should change, and in so doing demonstrates, firstly, why it is so difficult, and secondly, why people who don't know anything about guns should probably stay out of the national conversation. The underlying assumption throughout, other than that this will work and make a difference, which I dispute, is that the AR-15, and that's the gun that's put on the cover, is some sort of super weapon, that it is different in a meaningful way from all of the guns that the New York Post insists it does not want to ban. And that's not true. The editors have clearly been around enough conservatives to know that we do not like gun laws that are premised upon cosmetics. What they don't know is how to do it differently. And so they say,
just
sure.
Meaning when you say cosmetics, you're talking about, well, that gun looks very scary, so let's do something about that.
Well, I that's the impetus, but I'm saying that the assault weapons bans that we have seen, the federal ban that obtained between 1994 and 2004, the bans in states such as California, and the bans that have been proposed by figures such as Dianne Feinstein, all focus in on cosmetic features that have no bearing whatsoever on the lethality or function of the weapon. They ban weapons with, say, sliding stocks, adjustable stocks. Well, it just changes how far away the gun is from your shoulder, for example. Anyhow, the New York Post editors, they say, well, we don't want to do that. And so instead, they suggest that we should look at rate of fire and muzzle velocity. But of course, the rate of fire of an AR-15 is precisely the same as any other semi-automatic weapon. The rate of fire of an AR-15 is the same as the rate of fire of a handgun.
Which is one trigger pull, yeah. One bullet.
Right. It's the same as the rate of fire of the very first semi-automatic handgun, which was built more than a century ago. So if you are, as the New York Post insists, trying to avoid banning commonly owned firearms, I'll come on to that, then you cannot pass a law based on rate of fire. So it's a mess. It's a mess structurally. But it's also misleading. And as I say, I think the underlying premise here is that the AR-15 is some sort of super weapon, is some sort of egregious weapon. At one point in the editorial, the editor suggests that the AR-15 would, if considered by the Supreme Court, be held outside of the Second Amendment's protections. And they quote the part of the D.C. versus Heller decision from 2008, in which Justice Scalia said that weapons that were in common use, that's the phrase he used, were protected. They say, well, the AR-15 can't be protected because it's only used in mass shootings. Now, look, at a conservative estimate, there are 8 million AR-15s in the United States. At a more generous estimate, there are 20 million of them. It is the single most popular rifle owned in America. The idea that it is only used in mass shootings is preposterous. It's like saying that the Ford F-150 is only used in hit-and-run accidents. So I have no objection to people who differ from me on guns. It's fine. But this is a very shoddy piece of work, and it doesn't help anyone. It is a shoddy piece of work from beginning to end.
Charles, on this point where you have people who are ignorant about guns, sometimes proudly so, also insisting that they change laws involving the tools that they don't understand, I think that speaks to me. I am not a guns culture person. I've never shot a gun. It's not something that I'm interested in terribly. I'm a Second Amendment supporter, but not because I could be remotely described by detractors as a gun nut or whatever. But I do see, for example, in your home country, I saw this from the BBC this week, they put together a graphic about guns in America. And this was from their research team at the BBC, a supposedly well-respected news organization globally. They said that AR-15s could shoot up to 1,200 rounds per minute, which is, I don't even know how that gets past a single fact checker, but that's the type of claim that would be recited, and I can imagine go viral on social media in this country, because a lot of people who are very interested in new regulations on firearms don't have the foggiest idea what they're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, just to look at that on its own terms, that's 20 rounds a second. Now, even if the AR-15 were a machine gun, which it's not, you can't fire 20 rounds per second. It's physically impossible. The gun would melt. And at the height of the First World War, the horrific casualties that were inflicted by the water-cooled machine guns, the maximum output was about 60 to 600 rounds a minute. 1,200 rounds a minute. And this is why we need to be so careful. We are not having a debate over whether we are upset. We're not having a debate over whether what happened was an abomination. And nobody, except those at the absolute far end of our politics, the disgraceful end, is having a debate over whether the shooter in El Paso was motivated by anything other than an ideology, which is just a crush. We are having a debate as to what we do about that. And it really, really matters that we get our facts straight here. And the New York Post didn't. And it put its editorial on the front page, and its opinion editor said openly that he hoped that the president would read it and be moved by it. Well, that's their prerogative, but next time maybe ask a few people who know what they're talking about.
Charles, let's go through some of the other suggestions that we've heard. I talked on Monday on this show about the question surrounding high-capacity magazines, of which apparently, reportedly, the Dayton shooter had a number on his person at the time of the shooting. It seems to me that a high-capacity magazine, whether you want to say this is something that can be addressed constitutionally or practically or not, I think having a high-powered weapon with a lot of bullets before you have to reload, that does make it easier for someone who is evil to do as much damage as possible without an easy opening to try to stop them, right? I think it maximizes lethality. Now, I'm not sure there's something that can or should be done about that, but I think it's an argument that resonates with a lot of people about high-capacity magazines. In fact, a Republican congressman we have on this show a lot, Adam Kinzinger, has come out today in favor of limiting some of those. What's your response to people who say, what is really the utility of a high-capacity magazine when it is when it can be used for this purpose to make the process of killing many people easier?
Well, the first thing we have to do here is define terms, of course. The standard use of high-capacity magazine by the gun control movement applies to anything over 10 rounds. But most handguns out of the box come with magazines of around 15 rounds. So very often what are standard capacity magazines are being described as high-capacity magazines. Now, to your broader point, it is, of course, true that the more rounds you can put in a magazine, the more rounds you can shoot without reloading. That's obvious. It's also true that the more rounds you put in a magazine, the more likely the gun is to jam, which is one reason that the military doesn't use magazines over around 30 rounds. It's a reason that the ridiculous magazines that you see, and indeed the Dayton shooter had one, don't tend to work. They're notoriously poor, and he was shot, thankfully, fairly quickly. Had he not been, I suspect his gun would have jammed.
But he still killed nine people and wounded 27 more in less than a minute.
No, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. Of course, he could have done that with a handgun and three or four magazines. I think at the margins, there is an argument to be made here. The problem with this, of course, is that when you have a mass shooting, the vast majority of the people who are in the way are terrified and running away. And when we start getting very technical as to at what point a bystander might be able to charge a shooter, we have to remember that the number of people who are actually going to do that is tiny. Perhaps people with military training, perhaps people with solid firearms training, it would give them an opening. But there is always a cost to passing these laws, especially against the backdrop of a country that has hundreds of millions, maybe even a billion, so-called high-capacity magazines already in the cache. So
no, that's a totally fair point, Charles, and that's where these discussions get tricky, because on a simplistic level, on a superficial level, some of these fixes sound easy and sensible when you drill down just a little bit into the practical aspects of those proposed changes. It's just not quite as easy or as simple as it may seem. Charles, we're up on a break. At some point, I'd love to have you back to talk about, we had David French, your colleague from National Review, on red flag laws yesterday. There's this background checks push again. We don't have time today, but hopefully again soon. I'd love to get your thoughts on those. But in the meantime, people can read Charles's piece debunking the New York Post editorial from his perspective. It's called The New York Post Assault Weapons Editorial is Nonsensical. Came out August 5th at National Review Online. Charles, appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back after this short break.